This is a production of Cornell University.
So the time is 4:45 and I'm calling the May 5th last student assembly meeting of the spring 2011 meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here.
Yeah. Here. Big is no longer a voting member of the
Finn? Finn's unexcused. Unexcused. He's here. Jenkins. Jenkins, is he late? Late. Oh, he's unexcused? Kay? Yo, Adam, with Kay. She is late. It should be here. Unexcused.
Here, wait, is that Mensa? Yeah, it's here.
Here.
All right. Moving on to approval of the minutes. Ray sent out the minutes last night. You've all had a chance to review them. Are there any amendments to the April 26th minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Oh, wait. All right. Moving on to open microphone.
Okay. So open microphone. If there are any members of the audience who would like to talk on a topic not currently on the agenda for today, please feel free to come up to the table.
I'll make an announcement.
All right. Before I hand this over, I'd like to make my own announcement, to congratulate Alex Flores on winning the Student Test Award.
Flores, President.
And that's ILR for you. All right, now, okay, so I've seen that we don't have anyone coming to the open microphone. I'm going to move to close it.
Matt Andrews, first announcement report. For first.
Oh, yeah.
Next is President-elect Natalie Raps.
Hey, guys. Hopefully you all got my email, but starting this Sunday, we're going to have a late-night shuttle-van service that goes three libraries, Mann, Juris, and Olin. So the stops are Bradfield Hall, Tower and East, and Annabelle Taylor. And they run in succession with the TCAT bus stops, and the 92 and the 93. So for all of study week, May 8th to the 13th, every half hour there will either be a van or a bus to take students home to their houses. So if you take the bus, you'll go along the normal route. If you take the van, you get picked up at one of those street stops, and it goes farther into College Town, and then you can stop anywhere along the route. I sent you all the emails. Please join the Facebook group. By Sunday, I'm going to send out another PR initiative along with Mohit to get everyone's status changed to taking the service. And we're telling people that because it's a pilot service, basically it's only an 11-passenger van to begin with, and we've had a lot of support for it already. So telling students to be patient. If they can't take it the first night Sunday, go for the whole week, and just take it at least once. Because if we have the numbers behind this, we can ask the administration to put more support behind it financially, as well as to expand the service. So just let everyone know that it's happening. A lot of people are really excited. An email went out to the entire student body. But these are really the changes that are happening starting right now for the SA. So this is affecting us, and this is really to help all students. So please let as many people as you know.
And so I'd just like to congratulate Natalie on a job well done. It really has been a great job. A lot of work to get transportation to agree to that, so congratulations, that's awesome. Are there any announcements or reports that are not on the agenda that want to be made really quickly?
On behalf of the entire student assembly, we'd like to thank and congratulate Vincent Andrews on an excellent term as president of the student assembly, Ray Mensa as executive vice president of the student assembly. It was a really great year. I think we got a lot done, and you've taught everyone on the SA this past year. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah. Really quickly off that, not only Vince, but I wanted to thank all of the outgoing seniors for everything that they've done this year and how much they've contributed to the SA. And next year, you guys will surely be missed.
All right. Moving on to the Leadership Readership Program recommendation for 2011-2012 Student Assembly. Who's that?
Oh, that's me. Sorry. I'm sorry I didn't put my name on the agenda for that. Basically, you know, so...
You read on the blog.
I did not write on the blog, but I make the agenda. So, you know, so... Okay, so, you know, for those who don't know, this program is what is the main reason why we have the Times in the... and the USA Today newspapers available to undergraduates each and every day. While the Times is, you know, gone at the end of most days at most places where it's available. You know, I think it's pretty safe to see to say, and it's definitely been my observation that the USA Today there are still quite a few papers left after the end of the day. I know that when I woke to Live Cafe this morning at around 9, there were over half of the papers left over from Friday, and this is something that I see, you know, basically wherever I go. You know, the goal of this program is to encourage undergraduates to read more outside of their academic workload. You know, I think it's pretty safe to say, you know, that in terms of this paper here, we don't have people taking advantage of it. Quite frankly, I can't blame them. It's not a great newspaper. And, you know, so I was going, you know, to make this recommendation to next year's essay to look into trying to replace that paper with the Wall Street Journal. You know, from not only what I say is that among the best papers in this country today, also, you know, from my experience when it has been available in our dorms, I recall back in my sophomore year when it was at Court K. Bauer, it was gone by within 2 hours, you know. And, you know, so I definitely think that's some indication, you know, of how it would be received if it was included on our campus next year. You know, but I did not bring forth a resolution today, and it is my understanding that that paper is not currently a part of this program here, but I think it may be in the future, and even if it's not, you know, it may be worthwhile actually allocating more funds to actually make that possible. The Wall Street Journal. Yeah, but, you know, again, this is only my recommendation to next year's essay. You know, we can't really do anything about it now. So, you know, you may want to keep that in mind.
All right, thank you. You think that's Moving on to business of the day, submission of the preliminary 2012-2014 essay of requests for the actions to the actions listserv. And if anybody in the audience would like, there are copies of the agenda on the table there. But. All right, you have 4 minutes to present your request.
Welcome to the last meeting. Sorry, I have to be here anymore, but basically, here in front of you, you'll find a spreadsheet that comprises the student SWC allocation request from 2008 to 2014. So on the far left, next to the organization, that is the group of the students per student per year in 2008, 2010, student SWC 500 a year. In 2010, 2012, which was the last funding cycle, what groups requested, and then what groups actually received in an allocation from the student assembly. And then finally, 2012, 2014 is what the student assembly is going to be dealing with in the fall of 2011 during the borrowing funding process. So you see that currently your student SWC is $215 per student, which is $108 per semester coming off out of your tuition. And if the gave every student group what it wanted for the next 2 years for the 2012-2014 cycle, your student SWC would be $273.88, an increase of 27%. So it will be the job of the student assembly next fall during the bio funding process to look at each group's request, of which there were 29 groups and 3 new groups, and to figure out exactly which groups are using money student SWC effectively, efficiently, and are really contributing to student programs here at campus, and which uses are extraneous and wasteful and really harm the best uses of our tuition dollars. I guess at the end of the semester and then all throughout the fall, the SA will also be speaking with administrators and about their targets for where they want to see the student SWC go. A rise in part of tuition by 27% really wouldn't be sufficient and acceptable for majority of students on the campus. In terms of the process a little bit, the preparation committee will be with each group in the fall and make recommendations on what they believe the students should get in an SAS allocation. And the student assembly will approve that by the end of the fall. Some of the things we'll be looking at are the past performance and operation of groups, and as well as their professional activity and their programming with the I'd say that if you look at all these numbers, the majority of the groups, or at least a lot of the groups, aren't asking for anything different to increase at all. Student assembly, which is about 29%. But there are some groups that are asking for significantly more, and those will come on this radio during the bottom of the fall. Just very briefly, the reason why we're doing this is obviously to let you know of what requests there are for the student activity for the next 2 years to be set in place, but also because we'd like to share with the administrators and people in the community through the action poster that we're really the way to do that is by a majority voting for the board.
All right.
If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
All right. Moving on to questions and comments. Does anybody have any questions or comments regarding sending the e-allocation requests over the actions listserv? All right, so is there any dissent to sending out the requests over actions? Seeing none, we will go ahead and do that. By acclamation, it passes. Thank you. Moving on to Resolution 87, approval of the Alana Constitutional Amendments. So would all community members, as well as sponsors, please come up to the table. Can you put this on the table?
So thank you for being here today. Please introduce yourself, your name, and your record.
Hi, my name is Rachel Smith, and I will be the incoming president of ALANA.
Hello, my name is Ashley Garcia, and I will be the incoming ambassador chair for ALANA.
There we go, right? The main thing is that we are providing changes to our constitution. Some of the majority of the changes take place within the what our e-board will be compromised of. So the e-board will be changing, increasing about 10 people. We will be adding
more ambassadors.
We'll be adding more ambassadors. We'll also be splitting the publicity and the publications chair. We'll be adding a webmaster. And
we will also have 4 umbrella organization ambassadors for each of the organizations under ALANA. So there will be a BSU, a LAL, a NASAC, and a CATSU ambassador to the ALANA e-board. And we wanted to do that because a couple of the leaders of these umbrella organizations felt that they could be better represented in ALANA, so we decided that in order to make sure that they feel that their organizations are being well represented in ALANA, we will allocate an ambassador chair and a liaison from their organizations to the ALANA executive board. We added the and we also added, I believe it's under Section 2, the allocations for funding for the organization. So in order for these organizations under us to receive funding, they have to attend our meetings. We have one, our general body meeting.
Did you actually go through the document and just highlight what you made your changes?
Sure, absolutely. Yes. So the beginning of the changes take place in Section 4 of Article 6, the bylaws. So Section 4 is where the executive board descriptions take place. So number 1, number 2, those remain the same, and continuing on, those remain the same. The changes will begin on number 5 with the ALANA ambassadors. We will now have 6 ALANA ambassadors for the executive board. We made this change mainly because ALANA has grown in terms of our reach and in terms of where we're in the community. We have been requested by a variety of different communities to really extend our presence. And we've been working really hard, but with 10-12 members, it really got a lot. It was very difficult. So what we did was make sure that we extended the number of ambassadors that will be out in the community working for ALANA. The next change will be number 6 with the umbrella ambassadors. This is a new section where we have the 4 umbrella organization ambassadors, which we just spoke of. So number 7 and 8, the publicity chair and the publications chair used to be one role, but we split them into 2. We realized that one of the main reasons why we have a publications chair now is because we will be having a newsletter, which the community really, really asked us for and really wanted us to make sure that we put out. And it would take a lot of work, and the different publications that we're going to be putting out would be a little bit too much to put on the publicity chair, being that they also still have to manage publicizing our events and the Facebook and the Twitter and stuff like that. So we made sure to split those 2 into 2 different roles.
And also to increase our transparency as well. A lot of organizations have stated that sometimes they don't know the events that we've been co-sponsoring and any updates from the community. So it would be a nice way to like highlight what ALANA is doing and what the multicultural community here at Cornell is doing.
We've also included a webmaster, which really will, one of the new things for the webmaster will be the new ALANA blog that we're going to be putting out next year. They'll also manage the ALANA website, the Facebook, the Twitter. As we're stepping into a really more social network friendly environment, especially at Cornell, we found this position really important for us to have and just make sure that somebody's designated to do that. The next roles will be remaining the same. And Section 6 about the general body membership is what we were discussing earlier when it comes to allocation of funds and making sure that the organizations that are under us, they know that they have to attend the G-body meetings in order to get funding and be in good standing with ALANA. Yes. And section 2 of Article 7 is just the same thing, just repeated.
Yeah, but for the co-programming aspect, it's still the same stipulation for funding.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, let's do a few lists. We will start with President-elect Nellie.
Well, this idea stemmed from, I guess, discussion between the umbrella organizations and Alana. So it's basically a consensus where we came up with the idea together where everyone would be happy. So this is, a way for them to really be a part of the executive board and for us to really make sure we keep those relations together. Yes.
They are, if you look at under the executive board description, it does tell you how many voting members there are, and the ambassadors are will be voting members. Our condition would be that we change our elections process as well. There was another issue about our elections process being internal, so we had a democratic election. So you have to be democratically voted by the general body in order to have voting power, essentially.
And then
they have to be democratically voted. So anyone, essentially what we did was we put our application, anyone can apply. They can also apply for the umbrella organization positions as well. We had an election, was May 1st, and you just have to be voted by the general body, and that's pretty much it. We only were able to have the LAL umbrella organization ambassador because no one else applied for CAPSU, BSU, or NASET. So this is something that next year we also have to make sure that we kind of
revisit
and get more people to apply for these positions.
Yeah. Just one point here, some organizations there, I guess their concerns are, that they're not able to directly send who they want for those posts, the umbrella posts, and I think that's one reason why did not have as many people within those organizations run for those posts. I think that's a big reason.
Yeah, and one of the main reason why we didn't want to just have these umbrella organizations automatically elect their own members or just select someone is because there are people who fall under these umbrella organizations that don't necessarily agree with the leadership or even attend the meetings. So, for example, there's organizations under LAL or under NASEC or under CAPSU who may not necessarily identify with their umbrella organization, but they're still of the ethnic background. We want to give everyone a fair chance to run for these positions. So that's the main reason why we didn't want to have it just so that it's kind of like chosen by the umbrella organization themselves.
Just one more point here. Just make sure that we have all of the sides here, because you're not here right now. From the umbrella group, concern that some members of the umbrella organizations have with the changes that half of the members chosen that way, they're not sure whether they'll be able to work with whoever is elected to that post on their own e-board, because they're representing their e-board to Alana, and if they can't choose that person, you know, then yes.
So I think probably more discussion about this is 10 questions now. So we'll go on to Does Alana see its primary responsibility as to its member organizations or to the organizations underneath its member organizations?
Are you referring to like umbrella organizations versus
right. So are you,
small,
are you primarily
smaller
concerned
or
with the multicultural organizations
yes.
at the very
right.
end or with the
yes.
umbrella?
Alana finds itself, our primary focus is really the communities that we represent. It's mainly about the communities. So the organizations, the umbrella organizations would be an overarching, you know, the overarching next level under us, and then underneath them would be the smaller groups. But then again, we have to realize that all organizations that are at the third level don't necessarily find themselves, you know, particularly with one group. So we just make sure that we have that connection with all organizations that find themselves identifying as multicultural or a minority on campus.
Right.
And I guess, and this is there's really no answer to this, and it's kind of a tough thing for you guys, I guess, because on the one hand, you want buy-in from these member organizations, right? You want buy-in from LAL, Tech, Pastor, BSU. But on the other hand, you also don't want to, you want to represent the entire community,
exactly.
and there's always internal fault lines.
Exactly. Well, I think that's the main way that we help to keep that together would be why we have the 6 ambassadors at large that are not necessarily directly with one organization. They're not a BSU rep or anything like that. They're just an Alana ambassador at large.
All right, Kathy, speak with you. Did you get me? My question is your answer. All right. So, you know, a lot of these changes to your constitution have been as a result of speaking with a lot of your umbrella and member organizations for at least the past year, if not longer. So my question kind of is, are all the changes and all the issues that you guys have been discussing, are they all contained in this document, or are there things that we should be considering long-term? Are there issues with your member organizations that haven't been addressed by these changes and that you're looking to address in the future?
These are the issues that I guess have been put on the table over the past year that we've made sure that we're just trying to take steps in the direction that we're just trying to, I guess, answer all issues. So if organizations continue to feel like we're not, you know, representing them in any way, we're always willing to make changes. But as of right now, these are the issues that were presented to us and that these are the ways that we try to combat those issues.
And we also feel that this is a start. We wanted to make sure we knew we couldn't completely like transition just like that. So this is just laying a foundation for more change. I know in recent events in dealing with the BSU Executive Board as well as La Social Latina as well as CAPQ Executive Board in discussing the actual umbrella Alana ambassador positions. I know for the future they would want to have more, I guess, of a connection when selecting them. So right now, some of the executive boards aren't doing a democratic election. So we wanted to make sure those positions that were filling the umbrella ambassador positions were democratically elected, so they were in that instance. So that's the difference that you see, where an umbrella organization will have internal elections, while we'll have a position which representing that umbrella organization democratically, although we have those students, the actual students who are interested in that particular position, to consult with that umbrella organization before running for the position.
Antonia Singleton, outgoing president of Alana.
All right. Next is Representative Judd. My question was a little bit dealing more towards the future. I know you guys are going to be
Yeah, BOQ is not doing it anymore. I would definitely say that Alana could still serve as a purpose for the umbrella organizations. While we've even meeting with the students that are on the executive boards of these umbrella organizations, we understand while also meeting with the group members that make up these groups that fall under both of our umbrellas, some people still feel like they could they rather come to us rather than their umbrella organization. So I feel that while we still have these connections with those student groups, we can still make sure to bridge the gap through the Alana umbrella ambassador position to make sure that we're still on the same page, to make sure that we're still going towards the same goal, which is to...
Ambassador?
Yeah, because we would... The goal is, although they're going for byline funding, we still want to know what's going on in that community. We don't just want to break away, and it's Alana and CAPS too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure we have it. I know that we're working on getting all the numbers for this year up, but we probably fund them a lot more than any of the other three combined, other three minority groups combined for their large programs that they throw throughout the school year.
And there's more organizations?
At the time, on the comments of other organizations, I thank you all. This body, of course, is always open to discussing with any organization the issues that may arise, any issues that may arise, but we thank you on the changes. Mm-hmm. And it's time to get to the conclusion of our statement, but so I think this is a call for questions. Second, we'll go ahead and do a platform vote for the approval of Alana's new charter. We're in favor of Alana's new charter.
So I'm not sure how many of you got the chance to read the opinion piece I had in the Daily Sun on Wednesday, but it pretty much laid out in... Hello? It pretty much laid out in broad strokes why this is necessary. I know it's not like the normal functions of the student assembly in terms of discussing late-night programming or different activities and funding, but I still believe that it is important because... to know the extent of our rights and our responsibilities could help people grow in all those outside the classroom activities that they participate in. And so I do have a few amendments to the document, which are noted in the deletions that you could see. I guess I'll just, for the sake of formality, state them now. I'd like to amend the last resolve clause, given that President Andrews and a few others, I know Representative Danter spoke to me about this. Perhaps going through all those different hoops wasn't exactly necessary, so we're going to delete from the last resolve clause employee assembly and the faculty senate, as you can see in the comments section. And that's also done in the 11th and 12th articles. So that's just, you know, SA, GPSA, UA, that should be enough. And the other, so I guess that's one amendment. Should we just say all of them? The other one is, this was from Joshua Adams, who's the director of Cornell's policy office, said to just clarify it, we should add the language, after inappropriate, it goes, both of which must be in accordance with university policy. And he also had other deleted after incorporate. So the first one is, if you could see in the middle of, in the introductory, the second paragraph, the third line, there's underlined, that's new language. And then delete the word other. So that's all the amendments I made over the week, thanks to Joshua Adams in the policy office and a few of you for responding to my emails. So I guess I'll make that amendment now.
All right. So are you going to do more regarding the document?
Sorry? Yeah, we can move to debate.
All right. So we are going to go ahead and move to a speaker's list and vote essentially on the First Amendment, which is deleting employees that respect the Senate from the last week, therefore, assault clause, as well as Article 7, or 12, ratification. They are necessary because it was the fifth of the day last. So only you two can be without needing to vote. So you can't part of it, you can't part of it, and you can't move to the next one. So there are two parts of it. First, we need to vote. So on the amendment, quick change for session. All right. Is there any dissent? Let's look like what they did. All around me, is there any dissent? For the amendment regarding employees coming back to the Senate. All right. Seeing no dissent, that First Amendment is passed. Moving on to the Second Amendment. I motion to consider all amendments
as one. There's only one more. I left that part vague. There are a few options that would be perfectly fine with me that I'd like to see. It could be distributed via email to the new students during orientation, or it could be printed out for them, or it could be on a place on the Office of Dean of Students website that's clear and could be considered distributing to all the students. Any of those would be fine, and I leave it up to the Office of the Dean of Students to choose the appropriate method for getting this out. Yeah, I calculated it would be like 4,000, but yeah. I do think the UA is important. The traditional role for the UA back when it was established in 1982 was kind of to be the Senate. So they'd get considerations. And in terms of, we're asking the university to endorse this type of policy. Well, they represent the university. And originally I also had the Faculty Senate and the Employee Assembly in there because I do think when it comes to being harassed by another individual or academic freedom, those things can involve employees and faculty. So I think that if we want to have a document that everyone could have faith in and everyone could believe in, then it might be wise to make it a collaborative document and to include the University Assembly in on it. That's my logic. Well, if anyone wants to motion to co-sponsor, they can make sure that next year this gets followed through with in terms of the other assemblies. Unfortunately, time-wise, you're correct in saying that the GPSA and the UA, for that matter, are done. They're adjourned. So whether this could be an online vote or not, I mean, that's up to those assemblies, or if it has to wait over a year, as long as this doesn't get dropped and we have something back from President Scorton, that would be acceptable. I mean, it's a shame that this is the timeline and it happened so late, but late is better than never. I mean, there are, but they're very few. It does mention in the third sentence there, student publications may not be penalized for their editorial policy or content. But to get down to your question, the reason that College ACB boycott resolution was not to make sure that Cornell University stops putting College ACB on its server, because they can do that. They have the technology to stop a website from showing up on your screen. The reason I didn't go that route was because I believe in this Bill of Rights, in this principle that you shall be free to communicate and express your opinions however you want, that there shouldn't be a limit on your freedom of speech in that manner. So the reason there wasn't an outright ban on that website was because that this is a fundamental liberty that I think should be included in any Bill of Rights.
Well, there's no question that Yes.
Danker?
Yes.
Desai?
Yes.
Gitlin?
Yes.
Torjani?
Yes.
Kay?
Yes.
Mesma?
It's not perfect.
Moon?
All right. Moving on to Resolution 80, Bob Roof Course. All right. All members of the Bob Roof Committee would like to come up. All right. All
right. How you doing? That's fine. All right. May I begin? All right. Thank you. So, again, we are re-presenting the Campus Pub Report. This is more of the official presentation because last week was more of like an FYI and this is like, let's vote. So... I mean, it doesn't have to be as long, though. It's just, we are still technically in a holding pattern for the administration. This afternoon, I was in a meeting with VP Murphy, President-elect Raps is there as well, and VP Murphy just received Dining's financial report, business plan, regarding the establishment of a pub in the Ivy Room. Representative Gitlin, VP Gitlin was also there. And from her perspective, financially, a pub in the Ivy Room is a viable option, which is awesome news. So what we're still waiting on is university liability, and of course, approval of the general idea, philosophy behind putting a pub or tavern or whatever we are going to call it in the Ivy Room. However, this great, new development in the process has no bearing on the Campus Pub Report. The report is simply asking for you all to approve this as a belief of the assembly. And we have Mike Motley here, who is the executive director of the Student Union Board. And so he is going to be, integral to, or within the management of the pub. The Student Union Board is integral to the management of the pub committee, since the programming aspect is going to be housed in the Student Union Board, and you can all feel free to ask him questions and ask any of us questions based on the pub report. And with that, would you like to say anything specifically? Anybody else? Technically.
Okay, because you do with this membership of the subcommittee under which sub now include MPLC and include Haven's wife, and as much as I would love Haven to have two seats on this subcommittee, I do feel as though MPLC does deserve a position on this thing.
All right.
So I'd like to amend the appearance of the first Haven on page 7 of the pub report, the one in long half, to be replaced by MPLC instead.
I think we find that friendly.
Yeah, I'll offer that as friendly.
Yeah.
process going forward to consider is to allow groups who launch poll events in this area to make them dry if they choose. I know especially MPLC, all their events are dry. And so it may be something to consider to allow the option every now and then to have a dry event in there. Otherwise, I think this is fantastic.
So really quick, non, a pretty trivial question. Have you thought of a name for the pub?
It's not trivial, but no, we haven't.
The Vincent Andrews Pub. That's
no.
The
thing.
No,
it's, no, we will not do I think that at this point we are probably going to leave the naming of this pub, it comes to campus, to the pub committee of the Student Union Board, but I hope that they use the occasion to publicize the venue. Personally, I like the Ivy Tavern. I think that's a pretty good name, since it will be housed in the Ivy Room. So going on the record saying that, but... whatever. We do not have a name.
Okay.
Written nine. Don't put my comment on the record.
Okay.
How about Vinny's? Vinny's is more impressive.
Last comment. And obviously the committee has worked really, really hard on this draft and then the first, obviously, report that's been presented to the SA. And, you know, it does attempt to address late night programming issues at Cornell, but we recognize and hopefully the SA recognizes that this is just the first attempt at addressing late night programming on campus, and that next year's executive board, and Natalie has been very, very for this, and so has Mohit, has spoken about this a lot. The fact that we need to continue to address late night programming next year and into the future, because just getting this pub off the ground, while a great start, is not going to fully address these issues, and so we're continuing to look forward to addressing them in the future.
I can vote on this. I can vote on this.
Yes.
Yeah,
I can vote on this.
Yes.
All right, so
proposed an amendment last week, and it didn't make the agenda. So before I go into introducing this again to everyone here, I'd like for you guys to all take it down. On point number two on the second page of this resolution, after point number four, within point number two that says a calculation of their SAFC funding per member, please include, the committee may further review all student assembly documents relating to the relevant student organization. All student assembly documents related to the relevant student organization. Should I explain it? So as it stands right now, we're only allowed to ask the organization for whatever, you know, they've done and all their statistics, and we believe that since that's self-reported, we should also have access or the availability to check that. So, for example, right now, if I'm reviewing an organization, I could say, give me XYZ, you know, these statistics, and there's no way for me to know if they're factually accurate. I don't believe that the organization would go out of its way to lie to me, but at the same time, this is just a check on that measure, and, you know, just to make sure that the committee and the chair can cover his or her bases.
We are now going to figure something speakers on the amendment. Are there any speakers or voices at this time? Let's call the question. Call the question, but second, is there any dissent? Seeing none, I'm assuming it's a call for application. Any dissent?
Now to the resolution itself, I'll just run through it again and then go through some of the rationale behind it. So again, spring of 2009, the RSO task force was commissioned, and there was a moratorium placed on registering new student groups. After, you know, the RSO task force did its work, Vince and Yulia, or President Andrews and SAFC co-chair Yulia, whose last name I can't remember, proposed the SAORC, and what they proposed basically the initial version of what we've seen here. The committee, I started doing research on it over the summer, came back here within 4 or 5 weeks, had met with the SAFC, the SAO, and the Assembly's office, and by and large had everyone on the same page. The committee began meeting all of last semester, went through maybe about 8 or 9 meetings, and then we realized that we could have been to a certain extent hampered by the fact that we didn't have access to SAFC documents. Then, you know, began talks with the Office of the Assemblies and found out that the Office of the Assemblies could not provide us with that level of support. We also, during that process, realized that we'd reviewed close to new and existing about 80 organizations and had not found even one instance of there potentially being a duplication of resources. You know, as we went on, we also realized that we needed the Office of Assembly's documents to actually effectively review organizations. And then we came to the conclusion that since, you know, there was a low risk reward, as well as there was a low effort to reward, as well as, you know, the fact that the Office of Assemblies could not physically provide us with the support, we decided to, or I guess I decided, and I proposed it to my committee, to amend the charter of the organization so that the committee, so that its first and primary purpose is to review new organizations, so essentially to prevent further duplication of resources, and the committee will only review current or existing organizations if any duplication of resources or violation of any of the underlying rules was recommended to any member of the committee or the chair, basically just brought to the attention of the committee. I know that some of you had last week asked Representative Block what he thought about the resolution. We actually didn't have time to meet between this last week, but he did look over all the paperwork, and I guess you can ask him to speak to that when he's ready. At this point, I'll take questions. So the SAO still, on average, so the way the SAO works is every year they clear the student database, and so in the first 3 weeks of classes, all the old student organizations have to re-register. So after that whole period is done, I would still say the committee would meet once a week, maybe for 45 minutes. There's been a continual flow of 2 to 3 organizations a week that are created. There's, again, in January, a lot of organizations choose to re-register and start second semester for whatever reason. And so, you know, there again is where the committee would be very busy. And we currently would then need to work out a system with the SAO where old organizations that existed last year or this year, I guess, won't be reviewed next year, but at the same time, we can filter out which new organizations are, you know, are looking to be created so that they can be reviewed. And it's a little bit, you know, of... It's a little bit complicated with logistics, but I'm sure we can work it out. I'll take Jeff to a meeting with everyone in question.
Is it just one question? So the 900 or so organizations that re-register from August, those, not all those 900
so first of all, off the 900 and I guess 20 organizations that exist right now, about 300 are graduate student organizations. Right. We don't review them. So if you exclude them, you have about 600. Up to 600, but anywhere between 350 and 450 register in August, and then the rest of them register throughout the year.
Right, but those 350 would count as new organizations?
No, they wouldn't. Of those 350, like organizations that didn't exist in the past,
right.
Those would count as new organizations. So I envision maybe 20.
Okay, perfect. So I have a question. How is the relationship with the SAO?
Great. They think that this committee is effective, but they also understand that, you know, the amount of time that goes into this committee is not necessarily, you know, does not necessarily correlate with the amount that we actually get out of it. And they, I shot this over to Catherine. She had no major issues with it. They work with us, like, really great. When the committee was fully operational, I got about 5 emails, or I guess one every day of the working week from them telling me what the changes were. Ralph Stein is very pro this. Joe Scavito is very pro this. That's all, yeah.
Awesome. Are there any other...
Is there a proxy? Gitlin had a proxy?
continue that.
So I guess you gotta tell me at the start, right?
Nature Fison, future LGBTQ representative.
Sure, so I guess the first thing would be everyone in the community, you will get to vote on this because this is a sense of the body, so, you know, feel free to pay attention or whatever. I'd love your vote. Anyway, so... Yeah, exactly. Alright, so I presented this resolution last week. There have been some small changes after I spoke with Haven and with the director of the LGBT Resource Center, Matt Parcella, just to hash out the details a little bit more thoroughly. So essentially the rundown is there's a position in the university currently that is left unfilled. It's called the Assistant Dean of Students for LGBT Life. This position, in its job description, 40% of the job description, 40% of this individual's time as a full-time employee is specifically listed as advise Haven. Those are the exact words, advise Haven, and there is a long list of what that means. In addition, 35% of the job description of this individual is essentially advising Haven. It's basically program building, collaboration with other organizations. So it's really about 75% of a full-time employee's job, according to the administration, to advise Haven and keep Haven's programming working effectively. The position is not currently filled, and so essentially it's fallen to the wayside. So every now, you get the director of the LGBT Resource Center, Matt Parcella, putting in way more time than he's actually paid to put in order to help Haven along. You have other administrators contributing their extra time as well. But at the end of the day, Haven is not getting the advising that they need to continue to be an effective organization, and it's actually amazing to me that they've been able to keep up the level of programming and the level of student engagement that they have these past couple of years. The position has been filled once since 2004, and that was for a brief period between 06 and 07, but that individual then left the job quickly thereafter. The result of this is that Haven has not been able to hold a president for longer than one semester for the last 2 years. They have, the officers of Haven have had to take on far more responsibility than students should be taking on to run any organization, let alone a Byline-funded organization. And so we really feel as though it comes down to the administration. They have this position. They have a job description for this position, and so it's their responsibility to fill that position. How much longer do I have? Great. One thing that I would like to address is the administration's use of resources for the multicultural community, specifically the LGBT community. There's been definitely improvements in what the administration is doing for the community, especially with 626 Thurston, which will be going active, I guess, at the beginning of next semester. And that's essentially a single location that a lot of these multicultural organizations are going to be put into so that they can coordinate better and they can have proximity to one another, and it's going to be really nice facilities. With that said, though, having all of those things still does not make up for the fact that Haven needs an advisor. If there's not someone who can help Haven program, who can help keep the institutional memory of Haven active over the years, if there's not someone who can be that vital link between Haven and the administration, then no amount of more resources and more space and better space is going to make this organization more effective. It takes an advisor. I think anyone who's a president of a student organization on this campus knows what it means, or even any student should know what it means to have an effective advisor. And Haven, a Byline-funded organization with over almost $30,000, should have an advisor.
Sure. Just thinking into the future of the LGBT community and the SA, we can only hope that next year's assembly, their strides will help make this community bigger, stronger, and more involved. And I think having this position is essential in successfully implementing these new initiatives and being prepared for not as well handling all our students now and our future students. There we go.
Ridiculous.
specify the significance of having like a staff or administrative position for an advisor when sort of the dominant economic climate of the university is sort of you try to reduce the administration?
Sure. So the administration, yes, in some places is reducing the number of positions, but at the same time, in other places, they are increasing them. So 4626, see, that's a weird, because it's not actually the number 4, but for the new location for the multicultural community at 626 Thurston, they are actually hiring 3 new positions. One was internal, so Renee Alexander was recently appointed to be the Director of Intercultural Programming. Recently in the Sun, you may have noticed another article for her, I guess, assistant. So they're definitely hiring new people for certain aspects. And I think that when it comes to a Byline-funded organization that has an impact on so many students, and it's a job that the job description to advise Haven is in no other individual's job description except for the assistant dean of students for LGBT life. And so to basically leave this student organization, an essential student organization for multicultural issues on this campus, to not have an advisor because they refuse to fill a position, I don't just think that it's annoying or that it's harmful to students. I think it's reckless. And I think that ignoring this any longer is a real problem.
Why is that?
So currently, everyone on the payroll has 100% responsibilities for their time, right? They're all full-time. Any full-time position has 100% of their time already laid out. In the past, the university has tried to give others an addition, you know, full-time employees an additional 20%. You know, 20% of their time should now be devoted to advising Haven. And they did that last year with 2 people, Jared Cruz and David Bell. So essentially, they're supposed to take 20% of their time, of their full-time job, and devote it to advising Haven. The problem was they also had 100% time for other things. So instead of doing 100% of their time, they did 120% of their time. And they weren't able to do what, you know, all of their responsibilities as effectively because they were doing more and not being paid anymore. And so I think the point is we've learned that this position needs to be filled, and it can't just be filled by, you know, giving the responsibilities to, you know, different, you know, people that already have full-time jobs as it is. It needs to be one person who's qualified and who can put in the time to make this job effective.
I do have a question.
What? Say that again, Vincent.
So, I don't know if you have a chance to respond to what the administration
right.
Hire an advisor or allocate an advisor. What effect does this body have on the community?
Well, you know, Vincent, my big challenge over the last several years has been to avoid layoffs. You know, every year in the last 3 years, and it looks like it'll be another 3 or 4 years, we've had to return resources to the center. And in the first 2 years, it was money that we had just in various kinds of accounts that supported activities and other things. That went away. And then it came down to the matter of trying to find open positions that could be returned to the center. And so that's the way we've avoided layoffs. And I have represented myself to the Dean of Student staff that my goal would be to avoid losing any of those jobs so that people could keep them. I'm going to have to continue to do that, and that's my focus. So I'm very sympathetic to the needs of the LGBT Resource Center and to Matt in particular. I know how hard he works, and there's nothing I'd like better than to have the resources to recruit and hire an assistant dean for Matt. That may happen in the next few years, but for the time being, I'm just simply obliged to save jobs as best I can, not make new hires. Now, with regard to the positions that Renee Alexander, A.T. Miller, and an associate dean will eventually be filled in the graduate school, Those are actually reallocation of resources to these positions. So it's not new money. It's actually money that has been simply moved from one area, principally OMEA, into these new forms. And, for example, in the graduate school, there used to be an associate dean who has retired, and that position was then filled with the new associate dean. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see any extra money on the table. We're simply using existing resources that we believe can be better used in things such as 626. And with regard to the creation of 626, the funding for 626 came in pieces and parts from all over the campus in little, you know, chunks of money that could be volunteered from various quarters. So, and it's only $1.2 million, which is a very little amount of money if you look at the 8,000 square feet it's renovating. So, suffice to say, I don't want to get long-winded here, we are just in a really tight financial place, the whole university is. And I'd like nothing better than to do what this resolution suggests, but we are going to have to wait till we can afford it.
I would just, as one thing, like to note that this position hasn't been filled since before the financial crisis, hasn't been filled since 2004, except for a brief period in 2006-07. So while currently it may be difficult to fill the position, I'm not quite clear why in the past it was difficult to fill the position. And so regardless of the current status of the university's financials, I think this is something they need to be pushed on, because in the past they've just let it slide anyway. The community would like to vote first.
And the community also votes on this. So, as a team members, if you are in favor of this resolution, please raise your hand. The votes will be allocated. Are you going to raise your hand now? If you are against the resolution, please raise your hand now. By a vote of 6-0, 2 community votes will be allocated in favor of the resolution. Moving on to the assembly representatives, who also do a black vote in favor of the resolution in favor, please raise your black cards.
Sorry, into the mic.
Thank you. Thank you for putting us on the agenda. It was a very last minute request. Thank you for putting us on the agenda. I appreciate you putting us on at the last second. It's been a year since Cole has been here causing trouble, and we didn't want it to end without a little bit.
And CSAS.
And Cornell students can't switch us. But we have actually a pretty easy one for you today, or at least we hope so. So we're urging the university to disaffiliate from the Fair Labor Association. This is a campaign that Cornell Students Against Sweatshops has been working on this entire year. We've had dialogues with the administration going back and forth on this issue. Yesterday, actually, we had the executive director of the Fair Labor Association come and answer questions, and we streamed it live to a bunch of the universities, and we're pretty dissatisfied with his answers. Some background on the FLA, it's a watchdog group for apparel manufacturers, so it inspects factories where clothing is made, and issues reports on them. It has corporations on its board, the very ones that it's looking after, so it's kind of a fox watching the hen house situation. And in the 10-plus years that's been around, it has a pretty dismal record. It actually, we asked yesterday if he could point to one successful example in the last 12 years where the FLA has changed a violation of a corporation, and he couldn't point to one. So we are among many schools that are running a campaign to disaffiliate from the organization. If you are someone who's ideologically disagreed with us in the past, this is a great one for you to vote for. Cornell Students Against Sweatshops want to disaffiliate from the Fair Labor Association. But if you're simply just a responsible Cornellian, we pay the organization. We lend it not only the legitimacy of our name, but we also pay them financially. So I think it's a great thing to bring up right after Dean Hubble talked about how financially strapped we are, though it's a very minimal amount. And so we're urging for a sense of body simply to push the administration, saying that it's time we disaffiliate from this organization.
Really, that's what I say.
All right. So with that, I would like to get now the sense of body, so we need to vote as well. Do you answer first?
So historically, Cornell students have ideologically opposed the FLA as well as students across the country. So University of Pennsylvania has disaffiliated from the FLA before they later reaffiliated, but the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the first school to cut their contract with Nike, is also not affiliated with the FLA. They're only affiliated with the Workers' Rights Consortium.
I guess my response to that would be, A, there was a public forum that all Cornell students were able to attend yesterday, in which the FLA spoke on the allegations posed against them, and B, this resolution has been on the agenda for more than 24 hours, which means you have had the opportunity to request questions from any representatives, or it has been eligible to be on the agenda for more than 24 hours, which means you have had questions asked, sponsors about it. If you do have further questions, I urge you to ask them during the meeting. But I would strongly urge you to look back at the situation last time, which we urged the university to cut ties with an organization in which it eventually did. So I think that's recognition of the fact that the student assembly making such a motion does hold considerable weight, and seeing as how if the university was to do such an action, it would be during the summer, I would strongly recommend the university, the student assembly, if it feels necessary to pass this resolution, do so now rather than in the fall after it's able to do further fact finding.
I just want to say, you know, that the individual, he was here last night. I was at work, playing, was here, and I was focused out at that time, checked. And my question that would have been asked, I came to this event because of the impact that happened. I didn't know.
Could I actually respond to that, or is there... Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think this was harped on enough in the presentation of the resolution, but the FLA Cornell has now disaffiliated or pressured two organizations, both Russell Athletics and Nike, and the student assembly has been involved on at least one of those efforts. And the FLA on both occasions have actually come to the opposite conclusion as Cornell and the system. And so essentially, if we're paying this organization any money to do a job that we already had another organization, the Workers' Rights Consortium, doing for us, and they are consistently different, of a different opinion than the administration of Cornell and the assembly, I see no reason why we should be paying them money. I mean, it's silly to disengage and to pay an organization when we're financially strapped to duplicate resources and disagree with the policies and positions of this university. So if you support the administration in their actions and you support the rules of this university and you support the actions of this assembly and of this university's past, and you also don't believe that we should be paying two organizations for the exact same service, then you should be voting in favor of this resolution.
Sure. I want to stress, I think Matt made a bunch of good points, which is that the Workers' Rights Consortium does the same work. It's the report on which the students, this assembly and the administration base their decisions on both the Russell case and the Nike case, which were two cases that the Fair Labor Association both disagreed with at the time and in the meeting yesterday reiterated that they do not share Cornell's belief that subcontractors are responsible, which the administration and this assembly reaffirmed last year, and don't think that the factory reopening in the Russell case was worth it, was a good move. So I think they've shown not only to be redundant and ineffective, but ideologically opposed to this university.
So when the WRC was created in response to the FLA, which students and universities felt was an inadequate organization to do this monitoring because of the conflict of interest on its boards, the FLA changed its position, and as the university started affiliating with the WRC, the two groups together said, we can work together, and that was in 2002, but time has proven that they don't actually work together. They find very contradictory reports on a lot of different issues, like Russell and Nike are huge examples of where they were not in line and not working together.
And what amount do the university pay the FLA?
So it's a trivial amount. It's $1,000. It's more about lending our name and recognition to them.
And you mentioned in your first remarks that there are other campaigns on the university. In effect, do you know any of them?
Yeah, absolutely. At Rutgers University, some of you may have saw that they actually had a more than 24-hour sit-in last week around budget cuts, massive budget cuts, and one of the demands of disaffiliating from the FLA, Penn State University, University of Florida, Santa Clara University.
Thank you. So, to write about the resolution, I think that given that the WRC already duplicated the effort of efficiency and the necessary requirements that you would see from the FLA, it seems ridiculous that we have two organizations for the same one purpose. I think even further, because the FLA is not doing its job correctly, it's doing a shoddy job, actually. We should affiliate. And I don't think what the response to the executive vice president mentioned, even though the other universities have affiliated, everyone else is extremely good in the vanguard of doing this. We are progressive, and I think we should be able to take that first step in other universities having, especially in the way that we're voting here today.
Moving on to the GDP question. So my question, I think, kind of borders on what we're standing up for. Specifically, what is the reason to have the FLA, and why the administration, first off, why we still have it, and why would the administration ever want to keep it around? What are the benefits of the organization? What's the other side of your argument, the reason why we wouldn't want to have it?
There's clearly no reason. No. the reason it came that way is kind of we were affiliated with the FLA first, and then when students ran a campaign to disaffiliate from the FLA and join the WRC, the administration took the middle path and just joined both. Okay. And we've been stuck in that situation since then, since 2002.
It's kind of important to note that at the time, we had a university administrator represented on the board of the FLA, which is why at that time we didn't disaffiliate.
Sure. I hate to speak for the administration, but I'll do my best based on the communications that we've had. And I get the general feel is that they feel like while the FLA might be ineffective, they don't see it as actively harmful the way we did during the Russell campaign and Nike campaign. And so they think just having two organizations attacking the problem isn't a bad thing, has been the argument. Roughly that we've gotten, if I could put it in that light.
And also in admitting, again, not wanting to speak for the administration, but in admitting that the organization is flawed, admiring its good intentions is another argument.
Next, on the EDC election. Kala, much more so than the labor rights. And first of all, I'd like to motion to make this resolution today. All right, thank you. Motion is second. Is there any consent? And before I move on, I want to go straight, just assuming that it is today. So, and the clerk, please don't know. And before I call the question, I'm going to be able to.
Thank you. I guess on top of what I said, I think it's important to also add on that, we have not heard what the administration has to say about this issue. Now, of course, given your point of view on this issue, said right now that I'm not comfortable speaking for them. We have to have a resolution with other issues. This is simply have taken days to wait give a lot of weight to the opinions to what administrators and other people who have said in what they have said. We don't have that right now. I feel that we're passing out on top of that, but I think
I think they have, the entire summer to email these and then work with the administration. Our last meeting, so it's not basically the same assembly, and if they want to bring it back to the table, if there's any problems with the administration over the summer, then I would definitely recommend that. Again, we've supported their work with them.
Ooh, this is exciting. Thank you, President-elect Rapp. So, before you, we do have the chair of the Environmental Committee is not happy because we printed out the 84-page end of the year report. I was... many copies, 10 copies, so we have 800, well, it's actually it's double-sided, so it came out to 42 pages. So it's only 420 pages printed out. It's been an honor serving with you guys on the assembly for the past year. It's been an incredible experience. I know it's been a defining moment for, you know, myself, and you know who I am as a person and my time here at Cornell, and I hope that this report is also a testament of you know, your hard work and everything that you all have accomplished and we have accomplished together as an assembly. And so at this time I also want to try and, you know, it's for formality's sake, we do have to kind of approve. Actually, we don't even have to approve it. I just need to present it. I still need to add the resolutions that from today. But if you have a chance to review it over the next few days or weeks, please let me know. Because by the end of senior week, I'm going to be sending it to the Actions Listserv and President Scorton just for his knowledge. And I'll be happy to add any initiatives which you all, you know, undertook in which... involved this assembly, because I don't want to leave anything out. So, as you can see, I enjoy writing these types of things. So, are there any questions or comments?
Thank you for putting this together, and really, you know, presiding over the student assembly. I think we beat the record, I was told, of the number of resolutions from last year. Um,
I find it incredibly indicative of your gravitas that it already says on the end of your report.
Yeah, that. there were a bunch of X's.
President-elect Rath should hopefully carry over with that. But, yeah, great work. It's been a pleasure this year. And this is awesome. Thank you.
Can I interrupt? I just want to echo Matt's remarks as well. I mean, I think it's been a fantastic year. You guys have done amazing things. And I know your work is not done. And the leadership at the head of the table here, elect, who is looking forward to doing good work next year, are terrific. So I have to tell you, it really has been an exemplary year for the Student Assembly, and it's all because of you guys. You've, as President Gordon would say, you've kept us honest and our feet to the fire. So look forward to working with you guys next year.
Thanks, Ray.
And now, so with that, I call the last student assembly meeting of the 2010-2011 school year to adjourn.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.